Tuesday, December 2nd, 2021. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means watching a dealer pass out in the pit. I'm sure I'm not the only one that this has happened to. I've seen casino patrons pass out plenty in a casino, but I think this is my first time ever seeing a dealer go down. I was at the Craps Stadium Gaming at MGM National Harbor, and all of a sudden I sort of see movement. I'm looking at my screen, but in my peripheral upwards, I see some movement and I hear some gasping. And then I look up and realize there's a dealer on the ground. I quickly make sense of what just happened. Clearly, he's passed out. Now, I am not a first responder professional, but I do have plenty of training in this. I at least would know how to not make the situation worse. I believe that. And some standard, let's try to take care of this individual. The floor manager quickly turned off the games and ran out of the pit area, presumably to go get help. Here's my first question. How is there not a system where he can call for medical aid right there in the pit? Why does he have to leave the pit? Second of all, after about 30-40 seconds, this guy, the guy who passed down, fell over, starts stirring and starts standing up. And I immediately start yelling, "Do not let him stand up." The dealers are just kind of staring at me or just not listening. That's whatever. But I keep yelling, "Do not let him stand up." And sure enough, they just sort of let him do. He stands up. He's at his table. I think he's trying to still get his bearings. 20 seconds later, bam, there he goes, straight down again, possibly harder this time. He starts stirring again, and a member of the security team, which I imagine is their medical first response as well, finally shows up. By this time, a casino patron has actually dragged a chair into the area, so that way when he gets up again, they can force him to sit down. I'm sure plenty of you are trying to picture this in your head, what was this scenario, and trying to make sense of sort of some of this behavior. Now, I do know that, dealers are, of course, I understand, dealers are taught to, when there's something going on, you're face forward, paying attention to your game. Here's the thing. This is a stadium gaming pit that is surrounded by consoles. There's no players or chips inside of this area. Practicality would tell me that they can at least turn around and take a quick look at their colleague who's on the ground. At the very least, tell him to not stand up, for goodness sakes. After about four, and here's, so then, so one security shows up. They didn't know how to get into the pit. They did a full lap. They showed up. They showed up maybe, 20 feet away from the opening, did not realize that the opening was as close to them as they were, and went around the entire way around because they did not know where the opening of this pit was. How are you security in a establishment like this and do not know the access points into every pocket of the casino? Anyways, the Marine security guard in me was baffled by the leader of the floor having to leave to get help and not be able to somehow call for help, that no one seemed to really know what to do in that pit. Now, look, so when I say that I've seen casino patrons fall, right? And I have seen them do that near tables, and I have responded to that before. And I remember one time, I think it was at Foxwoods, a lady passed out. I ran up to her because I thought she had hit her head. I wanted to make sure that she didn't try to get up too quickly or anything. And I turn around and I sort of yelled, can you call security? And they all just kind of stare at me, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it. This is probably the fourth person you've seen do this in the past hour, right? It's not. So I understand normal live table games, dealers aren't going to like really flinch at this, that it's not necessarily their job. But this scenario where there's like they're an enclosed, all the one guy had to do was literally, I mean, when the dealer landed, his head is at the feet of the dealer behind him. All that guy had to do was sort of like look down and be like, you probably shouldn't get up. Bit of a first response failure, in my opinion, from MGM National Harbor. But oh well, that's not my job anymore. My job is to sit at their console and bet on craps. The reason why I was there, the reason why I was even bothering with this, bothering with the craps, stadium gaming all by myself, I was actually there for a drawing. I had enough entries that I thought, man, maybe it's worth me going. Now, when I say I had enough entries, all I mean is I had 10 times the amount of entries that I normally have, and to me, that looks significant. I quickly kind of picked up, like, not quickly picked up, but, like, as the day's going on, I was like, I bet I don't have nearly enough to even, like, really compete for this, right? When I really think about how often I, you know, people are there. And but anyways, I was there for a drawing. To kill time, I didn't really want to put a lot, I didn't want to put serious play in. At least that's not why I was there. So I sat on the craps, stadium gaming, and I just sort of played min bet, and yeah. Anyhow, I cannot believe I am just, a couple weeks away from Sorkfest. Sorry, Traeger. I can't, one of these days I'll remember what this is actually called, the thing that I'm a part of. I'll talk a little bit more about that after this week's interview. Really excited this week. Chase Bianchi, he was on about 2.5 years ago, talking about his life as a poker player. He's back now to talk about making the final table at the main event and sort of the other changes in his life. Pretty interesting that someone who stepped away from poker decided to go back to the main event because it's who he is as a poker player, and ended up getting to the final table of the main event. So we learned about how he got there, who he is as a poker player now, and the other developments in his life. Enjoy. Chase Bianchi, it's a pleasure to have you back, Chase. I don't know if you knew this. It's been over 2 years since you were last on The Better Life. February 2019 is when you made your original appearance, and I'm very excited to not only have you back, but under the conditions in which I'm bringing you back.
My oh my, how things changed in 2 years in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So let's start there. A lot of my listeners were excited that a prior guest on The Better Life had hit a WSOP main event final table. But for those that are less into poker or less familiar sort of with your journey there, give us a brief recap on at least your poker life, maybe a little bit from your personal life, if you're comfortable with that, on sort of what you've been up to the past 2.5 years.
Yeah, no problem sharing that. So the past 2 years have been quite a change. We have started a family. We do foster care. So with that, I mean, I'd been considering pursuing other things outside of poker, but more like 5 years down the road, and then COVID happened and everything shut down. So I was just like, okay, I guess I'll do something else. So I ended up going to school for a little 6-month program for web development, and really was transitioning out of poker and pretty happy with my decision. But, you know, you got to play the main event. So so about a year ago, I almost 2 years ago, actually, I'd left poker. And but I'm still going to go play the main, like, even if I'm a recreational player, going to fire in the main event.
Yeah.
So, of course, the run happened, and biggest tournament of the year to make the final table was pretty incredible.
Yeah. So what was, you said you were interested in doing some other things in life. Was that because you were what is more true? You felt a pull to do other things, or something inside poker was starting to disinterest you or push you out?
I would say it was both. So poker is awesome, but it can definitely get monotonous after so many years doing it. Like, I still enjoy it, but I found I was just like less motivated to study. But at the same time, I was really enjoying playing some high stakes games. So I wasn't really like looking to leave poker right away, but circumstances with COVID and the casino out here that I moved to the Boston area to play at Encore, they still have not reopened their poker room.
No kidding.
To this day. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a real shame and we can't really move. Our kids are, you know, through foster care. So they're custody of the state. So moving wasn't an option. And, you know, it kind of forced my hand, to use a poker term. So,
yeah. What about, I'm less familiar with the property, but what about Springfield? Do they have a poker table? I don't know how far that is from you.
Yeah, Springfield, it's a little farther. They don't get as big of games. And
okay.
I think they have opened up at this point.
Okay.
But certainly not what I moved out here for.
Right.
You know?
So you moved and then the pandemic set in, or is it the other way around? I remember you moving, but I can't remember how that places with how the pandemic was shaking out.
Yeah, we moved and then about 6 to 8 months later, we were in full lockdown.
Okay. So you had been there, got a routine, and were you playing poker all the way up until the pandemic hit, or how do you started? Yeah. You were. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was going great. I mean, the games are good out here. I was playing pretty well. It was going good. I had that 6 month stretch. I made six figures. You know, it was like really good.
Yeah,
really good poker out here.
So I know that you were at National Harbor often and other casinos in the DC area. Let's just first start with the room itself. How does the poker room itself compare up there compared to down here in Maryland?
So it's a shame that the rumor is that they're opening up in February. They're going to reopen, but they're only going to open with like 12 tables. And this, before they shut down, this was the most beautiful room probably in the country.
Wow.
It was so nice, dude. I think there was a rumor that they spent like $180,000 on like the roller tables that you put your drinks on, because they were like made of marble and stuff. You know, it's just the Wynn properties, they really have the high-end feel. And it was so nice. It was a really great poker room.
So why do you think that is? Because every year we hear about we hear about poker rooms that people enjoyed in Vegas closing on a regular basis, or closed poker rooms that are likely not to reopen. And here, Wynn in the city of Boston not only has a poker room, but invests all this money into making it a good experience. What makes that possible when poker is struggling in some other casinos around the country?
Well, I think it comes down to just like short-sighted casino managers and owners that, I mean, to be fair, poker is not a very lucrative thing for them.
Right.
But I think they overlook things like, well, poker players come in, they play the pit. So, or they play slots or whatever. So while those other numbers might look great, you might lose those people if you don't have a poker room.
Yeah.
And just like the overall experience of the casino is, it's pretty different when you're just a big slot house with some blackjack tables.
Yes.
I think the poker room does bring like a very clear community atmosphere to it. So I think a lot of it is, you know, people in big companies worried about the numbers.
Did you play the 2020 version of the WSOP main?
The online one?
Yes.
No, I didn't touch it.
Okay.
I wasn't willing to travel for it, and it looked kind of lame, honestly.
Okay. So the pandemic hits, you sit out poker for a while, you skip the 2020 WSOP, 2021 comes around, and like you said, like you're not going to not play it. What did you do to prepare? Did you do any last minute studying? Did you just try to play some poker before going? Like, obviously, I guess you could have gone into it completely cold, but I imagine you wanted to be somewhat warmed up. How did you prepare?
Well, opposite of the obvious, I guess. Here's been the freeing thing about switching careers is I don't have to worry as much about like performing perfectly or making sure I'm studied in every spot. I play poker once every couple of weeks. I play mostly like 2-5 no limit. That is how I prepared. I played poker like, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks. And then it's like, all right, not going to miss the main event. And, you know, like I've played poker professionally for 15 years. So
yeah,
that's not all going to wear off, but I definitely went into it about as cold as I could.
It kind of reminds me of, I was listening to a sports betting podcast earlier today, and they were sort of talking about how, you know, we've gotten so far in analytics and looking at every angle of the game that it's almost gotten back to a simpler handicap, right? To like, you know, if there's ways you can simply look at a game and still probably come to a similar outcome. Did you feel that experience at all of like, you're not grinding and not obsessing over it as much as you were maybe as when you were a pro, helped you simplify your actions, your responses, the way you navigated the tournament?
Yeah, I could definitely see that playing into it. I wouldn't say I noticed anything like that, but I will say that when you kind of remove a little bit of the pressure, it is a little bit easier to perform. So
yeah,
I know that I'm not relying upon like cashing the main for a paycheck or any of this stuff. So I'm really like, I'm the rec player. I'm like the dangerous rec player that kind of knows what he's doing. You know, right. I can just show up, and if I think that I just need to go ham and three bet all these guys and put the pressure on, I'm not afraid to do it. And, you know, if that's not the right move, like whatever, it's not my job anymore.
Do you, was there anything about the tournament? Now, I know it's only been a couple of years. So, you know, I don't know how often poker is sort of, evolving from how, but was there anything about how players acted, behaved outside of like pandemic type, like COVID protocols and stuff? Was there anything like kind of surprised? Like, oh, I get this wasn't the thing a couple of years ago. Did you have to make any adjustments or noticing different from how players were behaving or playing at the table?
You know, I think the most noticeable thing was that it felt just like it did pre-pandemic. Like you sat down and you're, especially in the main event is such a special tournament. And you're like, man, I wonder if this is going to like lose some of its luster with the COVID protocols and stuff, but it still had that like electricity of the main event. It was still, you know, felt important and felt fun. And at the end of the day, it was just a poker tournament, the biggest and greatest of the year. But it was a ton of fun, actually. The biggest notice was that it just felt normal.
Yeah. Interesting. For those that are unaware, like how many days is that from the first hand you got dealt when the event started to your final hand, at the main event? Like how long of a time investment is that?
So I flew out there on the 4th of November. I decided not to play on the 5th and to play on the 6th. So I started on the 6th and I think I played until the 19th. Does that sound right? It sounds right. So like, yeah, like 13 days. There was a couple break days in there at the beginning, but yeah, and it's a lot of poker, like pretty much 10 days straight of poker.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What was your schedule like outside of the tournament? I guess maybe the better question is like you said, the pressure's not there. You're there because it's a main and that's just who you are as a person, and you're going to keep going, you're going to keep playing it. But obviously you took it seriously to some extent. Like what was your, did you have like a routine every day, or were you just sort of enjoying life and just making sure you showed up in time when the blind started?
Yeah, to be sure. Like I definitely took it seriously. I wasn't flipping about my main event, but
yeah,
there just wasn't that pressure. My normal routine was like grab breakfast, get over to the Rio. I kind of made a mistake is I booked my trip originally for like 4 or 5 days. I'm like, I'm probably going to bust day one or day two and go home. And then I kept going farther and I'm like, man, every night I'd have to figure out where I'm going to stay. And
yeah.
And then like the Rio got sold out like right before I booked it. And it was just like kind of a headache and that stuff. But one of my like tricks that I think I'm going to do every year is I had a good book that I just started reading right before I got to the Vegas, and all the pressures of the day of playing poker for 12 hours in a day, you know, at the end of the night, I would get to go and lay in bed and open my book and just like go into another world and get away from the pressures of the main event. So that was like the best part of my daily routine, was just crashing at night and reading a book.
Yeah. That's I like what, sorry if I miss it, fiction or nonfiction?
It was fiction.
Fiction. Yeah. Okay.
Total fantasy world stuff is great.
Yeah. Cool. The total entrance was right around 6,600, which is actually on like pretty normal for the past like decade and a half. Were you surprised? I mean, 17 and 18 had over 7,000, but prior to that, the 6,000 range is where the entrance number had been. Were you surprised at all at considering how many questions there were about vaccination, like needs for vaccination, all sorts of stuff? Were you surprised that there were that many entrants after all of sort of the, some of the, challenges that they had with figuring out protocol and people's stances on that, et cetera?
Yeah, I was surprised because I figured, you know, vaccination requirements and stuff, like maybe lose like 10% right there.
Yeah.
And just all the travel stuff, there's a lot of people that are just like, you know, I don't want to deal with worrying about it and get my family sick and stuff. So I thought it was a really healthy number to show up. And I can only imagine next year we'll be in an even better spot with hopefully with like travel restrictions and stuff. So I think they're in a good spot, but you know, kind of leave it to WSOP to kind of ruin their brand. That seems to be what they do lately, but we'll see. I mean, it's still the World Series of Poker. So what are you going to do? We're all going to go play it because it's awesome.
Yeah. So let's, at what point, so when you passed the bubble, let's tell me where maybe you started to get a little excited or hopeful. Now you've been in this racket long enough to understand I'm sure that you were being objective, I can imagine, in a lot of the ways, but I imagine there had to be some threshold you crossed where you were like, oh man, this is going really well. When was that for you?
So I'd say there's a couple spots. One is, I don't know if you know this, but I played the main event. I think this was like my eighth time playing it. This is my first cash. I've never cashed it.
Okay.
So when we hit like day three, and usually cash like end of day three, beginning of day four, and I had good chips, I was like, oh, I might get my first cash. And it sounds so silly because I've like played huge poker games before, but cash in the main, man, that'd be cool. So that was exciting. And then the later time in the tournament that it really got exciting is once you got to around 100 players, the pay jumps started coming real quick. You know, there's a lot of slow pay jumps from like 1,000 players are in the money, like from 1,000 to 900, pretty small jumps, right? But once you get down to 100 players, it was like, boom, payout's going to go up 15,000, 20,000, 50,000. So that is when it got really exciting. I tried not to look at the payouts because it was like, I don't want to think about that too much, but that was getting exciting at that point.
Yeah. While you've never cashed in a main, you do have a bracelet, right? From 2016.
I do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, for those that are if that's news to them, just a quick aside, like, what was it like winning your first bracelet? Like, cause I'm not sure we touched on this in your original interview 2.5 years ago. And I don't want to miss the opportunity of talking about winning a bracelet. I think it's something every poker player dreams of, whether it's a 1,000-person field or the main, everybody sort of dreams of that opportunity. Like when you got to go home and be like, ah, I have a bracelet. Like, was that set, like not only personally, but as a poker player, like how satisfying was that?
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely satisfying in that, like, I won my bracelet after like 6 or so years of playing at the World Series of Poker. So like long gone were like the, oh, I'm going to win a bracelet this year. Like, after you play poker for a while, you're like, man, maybe I'm never going to win a bracelet. Right. So it came as a real surprise when I did. And it was definitely real special, but I will say that final tabling the WSOP main, even going out ninth, feels like a way bigger accomplishment than winning a bracelet in a weird way. But okay. Yeah, it was great. One thing I'll say about when I did win my bracelet, which I try to share this because it really surprised me in the moment, is I won my bracelet. And you know how sometimes you can have a big win or something happens and you're kind of like in shock. And I remember a couple of days after I won it, I was kind of like waiting for it to set in. And it was like surprisingly unsatisfying.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I remember sharing that with my guys from church that I'd get together with weekly. It's like, I thought this would be this real big thing, but I just feel so like unsatisfied by it, which I think is more revealing of like my heart and maybe what I was putting too much stock in that and expecting it to be this like amazing thing that would define my life. And, you know, I will give a shout out to Jesus. He's the one that does define my life. So,
yeah,
it was shocking though. I never expected that to happen, but that's how it went down.
Sure. Well, I mean, let's talk about Jesus quickly, because that is something that was a topic that came up in our first conversation that a lot of my listeners reached out and said they thought it was amazing to hear a poker player on that stage talking about his faith and how committed he is to it. You told Poker News in a interview going into the final table, "My faith in Christ is so much more than this." Do you think that adds to the relief of pressure, right? That you like being able to acknowledge going into what is one of the biggest events in poker, gambling, casino life every year is the main event final table. And you can acknowledge that regardless of this outcome, there's already something in my life that matters far more than this.
Yeah. Well said. If I could even compare it to earlier when I was talking about, now that I don't play poker for a living, there's not that pressure to like perform perfectly and try to maximize every decision. In the same way, when I am only defined by what Jesus says, who God says I am, it's like all this other stuff, I'm going to try to do the best that I can, but and I want to be a good poker player. I want to glorify God with how well I play poker. That's awesome, but it's not going to define me too. And that's hard. It's hard to be that way with things you're passionate about. I want to be really good at poker, but then I have to walk that line of not letting poker become more than it needs to be.
Sure.
I can't let that take the place of the Lord, who is everything at the end of the day.
A good friend of mine, Carl Schlegel, who was actually the first person to signal to me that you had made the final table. I let him know you and I were going to be talking. He has a question for you, but before we get there, he wanted me to also relay to you while we're on this topic. He wants to thank you for the amazing witness to Christ's love and mercy that you've had on such a large stage. And I know that he's not the only member of my audience that feels that way. So I wanted to make sure to relay that message to you.
Wow. Yeah, that means a lot. I've gotten so many encouraging messages about that. And I really hope that it was an opportunity. I really think that I felt the Holy Spirit filling me at times to talk about Jesus on that stage. And I hope that God was glorified through it. Really appreciate that message. Thanks.
So the question he has for you that I'm sure plenty of people have asked, maybe no one's asked, maybe everybody's like, great, Chase made it to the final table. Good for him. But I mean, after not playing poker seriously after not playing professionally for so long, you come back to the main and not only do you cash it, but you final table it. There had to have been at least one iota of thought of like, maybe I should do this again.
Yeah. You know, I thought about, you know, of course it crossed your mind, especially if you like hit it really big, like you ship like 4 million, right, for second place or 8 million for the win. And it's really like, at that point, I really have no financial pressure to like grind a job for $80,000 a year or something. But at the same time, I really, poker's in my rear view and I'm pretty okay with it. And like, man was kind of made to work, and I do want to get into software engineering and like put my education to use. And I do enjoy working in general, not specifically in poker, but man, yeah, it definitely crosses your mind when you have a really good result like that. But I'm pretty firmly where I want to be, I think.
Okay. Well, you placed ninth overall. Walk us through the final hand for people that have got a chance to see it. Just briefly tell us about like your last moments in the main, and maybe along the way in the hand, sort of how your emotions changed between being dealt your two cards to seeing the results at the end. Mm.
I do remember the morning of the main. That whole morning I just felt this like contentedness, and my prayer throughout the main event was to be content with every outcome. And I remember going into the final table feeling very content. And I was really okay with any outcome, but also I was talking to my buddy about like, okay, what's the strategy going in here too? Cause like, I want to perform my best too. And with the way the payouts were, ninth place got $1 million. Eighth place got like 1.1 million, then it went like 1.2. So the payout jumps really small. So I knew that strategically, you kind of just need to go for it. I came in short with chips, and there wasn't a whole lot of reason to play it safe. So pretty early in the day, I think we're only like 10 hands into the final table. I was in the big blind, and the player on the button, who's a very good player, he min raises. And the guy in the small blind was one of the chip leaders. He calls. So the guy in the button raising, like, obviously he can be raising a ton of hands, right? And then the guy in the small blind, who's a chip leader, him just calling means that he probably has a weaker hand. And I looked down at king, queen, and I had a perfect stack size to just ship it in there. And if they both fold, great. If one of them calls with like a pair or whatever, probably coin flipping. So it was definitely a clear spot to go for it. I rip it in, but unfortunately the button had ace king. So he had me dominated and I couldn't get there. And it was, you know, it was one of those moments where I busted out. It was like, nah, bummer. But also like, you're so exhausted from playing poker for like 10 or 11 days straight that there's this weird relief. It's like, yeah. Oh, it's over, man. And I'm just like, oh, I'm content with it. But oh, it's a relief too.
It reminded me of, how many years ago was it? It must have been 3 or 4 years. My memory on poker history is not great, but there was a I think it was a final hand at one of the mains, and you know, the guy calling took an exceptional amount of time and was being kind of criticized by the average fan for like how long it took him to call a hand where he clearly was sort of like where a call was made sense. And I remember a few professional players being like, he had to have been exhausted at that moment and needed to make sure he could use all of his energy to make sure he was making a clear and prudent decision. And I think that what you're mentioning is even makes that ring even more true, that at the end, you're just sort of you're going. I mean, you had to have felt of like 70, 80% in the tank at the beginning of the day, maybe even less than that.
Yeah, it's honestly surprising more people don't just like blow up and make huge mistakes, because the sheer amount of exhaustion just sets in, especially prior to, we had to get down to 9 players the day before. So we had an exceptionally long day the day before the final table. I think we played an extra like 2 hours on top of what we normally played. So I think everyone was feeling it. It's surprising more people don't just like lose their mind from exhaustion.
Yeah. So a couple more questions here. A tweet that you sent out, I believe it was morning of the main. Step one, retire from poker. Step two, final table to main. Step three, a whole bunch of question marks. tell us about those question marks. I mean, now that you're on to step three, you mentioned earlier that you're exploring new career opportunities. What do you think? You don't have to make any bold claims or any official statements here, but as far as your poker life goes and then your life outside of it, what does step three look like here?
Step three looks like those question marks are getting filled with a bummer finish of ninth place, but we'll take it. As far as personal life, professionally, I got a lot of people reaching out to try to get me a software development job afterwards. So like I had two interviews before this podcast today. So, I mean, praise God, if I get a job out of this too, like what a win.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's cool. And then it puts us in a good spot to put in a chunky down payment on a home.
Yeah.
Which is something we've been renting a place and kind of delaying it since COVID, or like, we're not sure what finances are going to look like in a couple of years. So it definitely helps that. And, I talked about a couple of times on throughout the main event that we are big supporters of foster care. We have two foster kids, and we'll definitely take a chunk and put it towards some foster care organizations local to New England here. Fostering Hope New England is a great organization around here that we're going to try to support them and make sure that they're taking care of the foster community out here.
Okay. Can you say the organization one more time? Because Carl also wanted to make sure that you mentioned a organization or charity that if people are inclined to support, they could. So what is that organization again?
Yeah, it's called Fostering Hope New England.
Okay.
And it's local to Rhode Island, Boston area, New Hampshire. They kind of service all of New England, and they do really great work on the front lines. They partner with churches locally. They do like some wraparound teams to support foster families as well as biological families. They do trainings. We went to one of their trainings, trauma training. So they're really doing a lot. We know the two guys, Jonathan and Mike, that run it. They're the founders, and they just have really great hearts trying to serve the foster community.
Yeah.
So, happy to support them. I'd encourage you guys to check them out and give them some support if you can.
And are you aware of any, any national organizations in case people, aren't in that area, want to support either something maybe more local to them or nationwide?
Yeah. So I would actually say, if you want to support foster care, find your local organization, because it's all run through the state, and every foster agency pretty much nationwide is stretched thin and usually has limited resources. So find your local foster care agency and give them time, they do like, gift drives for holidays or gift cards for struggling parents, any of that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Chase, it's a pleasure talking to you again, man. I was so stoked when Carl let me know that you had made the final table. I think as humans, we like it when good things happen to good people, man. And I think that your success in the main event, it rang true of that. Can we expect to see you in next year's main event? Do you feel like, okay, this is it, this is the high water mark, or do you feel more hungry now to be like, okay, I really like, I need to see if I can do this, if I can get further?
I'm always going to try to play the main event if I can. So
okay.
If I'm not too busy with a software engineering job, fingers crossed, I'll be happy to be too busy to play the main, but I'll always try to make it out there.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks for your time. Good luck both in poker and in your newly developing career. And thank you for all the good work that you do.
Appreciate it, Tim. Thanks for having me on again.
Always a pleasure to talk to Chase. I'd say always a pleasure. Second time in 3 years, but both times have been an absolute pleasure. That guy is fun to talk to, just a genuine guy. He represents and speaks to a certain segment of our community that I feel like appreciates that. And I wanted to make sure that they heard, that part of him was represented here, and he got that opportunity to speak to them again. Zorkfest, December 17 and 18. I cannot wait. I cannot wait. If you have been following me on Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife, a monthly pledge there gets you access to the daily episodes, the side bet action, as I call it, that I put out there. If you've been following on there, you would know by now that I will be in Vegas for about a week, staying at a handful of places, ending at the Plaza for Zork Fest. I am excited. The great room rate for Plaza has passed, but you can still get tickets for Zork Fest. This promo code is going to be active and through December 10th. This is the late early bird offer. $50 off. Use promo code BETTER, BETTOR, for $50 off your ticket to Zork Fest. Please, if you want to go, take advantage of that. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, people, when I put out a little shout out, like, hey, who's going to be all there? I was surprised at how many people rogered up saying they're going to be there. So, a lot of people are going to be in the area. There'll be a lot of gambling going on. Let me tell you, when it's not podcast time and it's not social hour time, I will be at the tables, my friend. Looking forward to that. If you have any questions about this, let me know. I will try to get a hold of Traeger, get those answers. Otherwise, you can hit him up directly. He's at TravelZork. Don't let your any uncertainties keep you away. Make sure you understand what the deal's about and feel confident in buying that ticket and hanging out with us in Vegas. While I'm there, I'll be doing a number of things, but my schedule starting to fill up. I would even go as far as say it's probably actually full at this point with a number of things that I'm trying to accomplish. However, if you are in Vegas that week, and so that by that week, I mean the week of the 13th. If you are in Vegas that week and you either are not going to be at Zork Fest, or you do not want to maybe try to compete with the busyness of Zork Fest, but you would like to hang out, grab a drink, throw some dice, maybe sit in the sports book and just cheer on a bet or two, let me know. Shoot me a DM. Get a hold of me however it is you know how to get a hold of me, and so we can set up a time. I am south of the Strip the first few days. I am downtown the last few days, and I have a room on Strip, sort of bridging the two, sort of in the middle. So there will be an opportunity to hang out if any of you are around and would like to do that. Better Santa, I saw a handful of you followed up with resubmitting your entry with your name. Thank you for doing that. I apologize to make you have to do that twice, but mistake on my part, but we'll push through it. The last item for some of the sets is coming in this week, so I'm actually going to start churning these out. The second I have a set done, boom, they're going out, because I do not want to mess with the logistics nightmare that is going to be the 2021 holiday season. So you may get your Better Santa stuff early. All I'm going to say is do not open before Christmas. I'm not trying to be a stickler like your parents saying, oh, don't shake the presents. There's an aspect of the Better Santa gift set that will not be complete until I am done in Vegas. That's as much as I'm going to say about that, but there's an aspect of it that will not be done, not be finished until I'm back. It'll be ready to go by Christmas. That's all I'm going to say. So do not open. You can open the box, like the stuff will be wrapped in the box, stuff like that. Put it under the tree, whatever you want, hang it on the mantle, throw it in the fucking closet for all I care. But don't open the presents until Christmas. Okay. I think that does it. Next week, Mark Duvall, you can bet on that. We're going to cover Luck episodes 3 and 4. We got Carl Schlegel coming down the pike, talking about his first trip to Vegas. How exciting is that? We get to relive Vegas through the eyes of a Vegas newbie. Excited about that. And then Brock Landers, who some of you may know around the sports betting community, His full, I mean, I know him as Brock Landers. What's his full, Brock Landers 41 is his Twitter handle. Sports Better. He's going to come hang out, talk about his journey as a sports better. And then it's Christmas, and I'm really not quite, I'm still trying to figure out Christmas. But yeah, excited about that. I keep on dragging this on because I keep on trying to think, am I missing anything? This is why I should do, I should prep with show notes. I've been podcasting for 10 years. I'm still not great on organizing my pre-show notes, but thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for following. YouTube.com/TheBetterLife is where you can check out the videos that I am producing. Just put out one last week on a cool slot machine that I saw at G2E, so please check that out. Hit the subscribe button. On behalf of Chase Bianchi, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.